Welcome to What Your Handwriting Reveals About You. My name is Sarah Dimmerman, also known as Help Me Sarah, and today I'm in conversation with Simon Zelkovich. Simon moved to Toronto from Winnipeg in 1967 to join an advertising agency as a copywriter and creative group head. A year later, he spotted an ad about a class on graphology, which is a fancy term for handwriting analysis. And this is where his love and interest in learning more about this field began. Simon left the ad agency in 1990 after being president for the previous 14 years and began focusing full-time on graphology. He has continued learning and helping others understand themselves better by analyzing their handwriting for over 40 years. I'm excited to have Simon join me today to discuss more about the interesting world of graphology and how he brings it to life. Welcome, Simon.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
So perhaps we could begin by you sharing some of what you know about graphology and what makes it so popular, perhaps how long it's been around, anything that you want to share with the listeners about the field of graphology or handwriting analysis.
Oh, with pleasure. I should point out that it's not esoteric at all. It's real. It's true. It has been around since the 1500s, and a lot of my contemporaries claim that it's scientific. I wish I could believe that, but I don't. I think it's very normal. It's very commonsensical. There's nothing esoteric about it. It's legitimate. It honestly is.
Do you think that many people deny that? That do many people think of it as hokey pokey?
Oh, absolutely, positively.
So it's kind of you. So you have to almost feel sometimes that you need to prove yourself.
Well, my own view is that I put a smile on my face, and I oftentimes feel like giggling, but I don't. I restrain myself, and I proceed to tell them things about themselves that they can't imagine anyone else would know.
Right. So then.
And then they come around.
That's right. So once you've done all that, then they have a better understanding of how the study of it is true, and that different patterns in handwriting often are representative of certain characteristics in a person, I would imagine.
Absolutely, Sarah. What happens is that if they ask me, well, how did you arrive at that point about me? I can show them with the pencil point or a pen point exactly the sign that told me about that. And I explain that in detail to them.
So is it like, are there a group of people who are, would you call yourself a graphologist? Is that a term for somebody like yourself?
That's what we're called, graphologist, yes.
So is there like a brethren or a group of graphologists that get together?
Yeah, there is an association.
Okay. And so I would imagine that those are the kinds of things that you discuss and legitimize graphology by understanding it and being able to explain it to people who may not know enough about it.
Well, it's important to be able to respect the other party and to see where they're coming from. And, you know, we have to keep a very open mind about that, and that's a key factor.
Have you found that it's changed? You said you've been in this field for over 40 years. Have you noticed any shift from when you started out?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
But it's been so minute and in such slow motion that it's almost not perceptible.
Really?
Yes, it's a slow situation. For example, throughout Europe, if you're applying for a job and you're the last five people up in line, 90% or 95% of the companies will hire a graphologist to examine the handwriting of the five people that they're looking at.
Really?
And make the decision based upon the report that they get.
Wow.
In Toronto, some of this does happen, but they beg you, they beg the graphologist not to mention that they've done this.
So it's done kind of under wraps.
Well, yes, they're embarrassed that people will think, look at that and laugh at them.
Yeah, but in Europe you're saying it's much more...
Oh, fully acceptable.
Really? So when you say Toronto, do you mean like the whole of North America?
Well, no, they're a little bit more open in the U.S., but not too much open.
Okay.
So we're making headway, but it's a snail's pace.
Okay. So people like yourself who understand it well would certainly, you know, be somebody good to stand behind the profession, because, as you said, when people have come to see you and really feel that you understand them and can explain things to them that they may not even have been aware of or point things out to them, then they may tell a friend, and I guess so it goes, right?
Well, you know, I'm not that hopeful, but I do want to be able to face another party and have them comprehend everything that's going on and learn a lot more about themselves as a result of that meeting.
So what are some of the reasons that people contact you to have their handwriting analyzed?
Oh, we're living in strange times, Sarah. We have single people, male and females, who are going steady thinking of marriage, and they'd like to know if they're compatible.
Right.
That makes sense, don't you think?
Yeah, so they would ask their partner, they would come together and show you their handwriting, and you would see whether they're handwriting defines certain characteristics that would bring them together as opposed to push them apart.
Well, no, I will see those signs, but I won't do that.
What would you do instead?
I won't do that because of the personal prejudice.
Okay.
My personal prejudice being that I'm going on 56 years of marriage, and you can't meet two people who are more unalike.
So you're absolutely right. And in my field, I know that often opposites attract. But when you say that a couple may come to you to see whether they're compatible, what kinds of things are you looking for then?
I'm looking for something that will help them understand each other. So that if one person is meek and the other is too strong, there will be instant complications.
Right.
And if there's no respect, equal respect in both instances, there are complications.
Right.
If one has some very negative things happening in their life.
Right.
And the other one has not had that experience, there are complications.
So just by pointing these things out, you just kind of raise their awareness.
I try not to judge, I try not to teach, I just tell them that they have to think about themselves and in their relationship with the other party. I have learned, to my dismay, that oftentimes they want to be analyzed together so they can hear each other's comments.
Right. You don't do that.
I did that only once, I wouldn't do that again.
So you prefer that they share what they want to share.
I think that's right. It should be their choice to share. If they don't want to share it, the other party shouldn't know.
Right. And so that's one of that's one group of people that may come to see you to have their handwriting analyzed. Can you share any others?
Yes. More and more we have, you know, people looking for our roots.
A root?
Our roots. Where we come from. How were our grandparents? What was going on? And those who are fortunate enough to have gathered up some letters, old letters, and they were always in cursive written, and they bring it to me, you know, they can learn a whole new life that passed beyond them.
Interesting. So you're talking about not having their handwriting analyzed, but bringing you letters, so long as they've
family
been... Family members that have maybe passed on, that they want to understand better, understand their legacy better.
No, absolutely.
That's a really interesting way to use handwriting analysis.
Absolutely.
And you're saying that it needs to be in cursive.
Oh, yes. If I'm looking at the printed word, even if I do my very best work, I won't exceed 40 to 45% accuracy.
Okay, so better with a cursive.
With cursive, I can tell you within 95%.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Any other groups of people that would come to you? You've got couples, you've got people who want to know about their backgrounds, their legacies. Anybody else that you could think of?
Yeah. I this is comical in its own way. I was invited by 12 psychiatrists.
Okay.
To a golf club.
Yeah.
This evening to analyze them.
Interesting. I guess all individually, as you would do for couples.
Separately. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mentioned 12 of them, and I came there at 9 o'clock in the evening, and they wouldn't let me out until 2 o'clock in the morning.
Wow. So they must have been fascinated.
They couldn't get over that. They were in a semi-state of shock.
Yeah.
and a good time was had by all.
So I guess in that way you're combining the science of what you do along with, or the skill that you have, along with it being a form of entertainment.
Well, if I can't have a good time, why would the other party enjoy himself or herself?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you bring your charisma to the party, but I can see how this would be an interesting activity to do at a get together, as you said, whether it be, you know, a group of psychiatrists or a group of friends getting together and having this as part of their entertainment for the evening.
I knew it wouldn't go beyond that entertainment portion because I explained to the doctors, I said, look, I've just shown you how somebody like I can go ahead and get to know a patient
right
in like 10 minutes, and you're going to spend 3 years trying to figure out, well, what's really going on with them.
So some of those, my psychiatrists may have wanted to take courses on graphology themselves.
Well, they should.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, it's true. It really would help. I'm thinking even myself, I mean, I could look at an intake form, for example, that my client has completed before seeing me and be able to maybe tell something about them before I've even met them.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Although I guess the danger there is I would maybe wait till I've met them because I wouldn't want to, as you said, like prejudge them.
Well, you know, no, you're too wise for that. You wouldn't have any complication with that.
Okay, good to know.
Also, since you work with children, did you know, for example, that if a parent has a 6 or 7 year old child who is attending classes,
right,
if you tell that child to consistently cross the bar on a T,
right,
near the top, rather than in the middle or lower than that,
right,
you're creating a far better student.
Really? So you can actually, it can work in the reverse, is what you're saying, is that you can actually dictate to some extent how the person will become based on where you teach them, as you said, to cross the T, for example.
Absolutely.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, and it's filled with this kind of nuances all over the place.
Hmm. So it sounds like it has so many different applications. Have we missed any?
Well, I think the educational system should take a good look at it.
Right. Although, do they even teach cursive in school anymore? I don't even think they do that as part of the curriculum.
You know what's interesting? I'm happy you brought that up because I get 10 out of 10 times when someone sits down in front of me and I say, okay, write these three sentences. And I do say, but please make sure it's cursive. They look back at me and they say consistently, you know, I haven't written cursive like in 25 or 30 years. I can't.
Really?
And I smile and I sit back and I say, I'll make you a bet. If you can't write cursive after about 15 to 20 seconds of trying, then we won't do cursive. And within 15 to 20 seconds, they're busy writing cursive.
Really? So they think that they've forgotten, but really
exactly.
They haven't.
It all comes back instantly, almost. Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, I'm not even sure whether they're teaching cursive in the way that we learned cursive, you know, with the lines and having to, as you said, cross everything perfectly and have handwriting was so stressed. Nowadays, you know, so much is done on computer that kids are really not fine-tuning their handwriting skills.
Well, that's a major issue and a terrific problem.
Can you share some more common strokes or styles of writing, for example, the size of writing or the slant of the letter,
yes,
that almost always depict certain characteristics in a person?
Of course. So if the writing leans to the right.
Right.
That implies that the person who wrote it is sympathetic to what may be confronting him or her.
Okay. They're leaning into that.
Leaning into.
Okay.
If it's straight up and down, that person will respond by thinking about it and then using her or his mind to determine whether it's okay. And then proceeding with the reaction.
Okay.
If it slants to the left, and we've seen that, haven't we, like from some people, then that person is primarily concerned with him or herself, and they judge the situation whether they can gain something from that or it'll cost them something.
Okay.
So you have those three different slants in your handwriting.
Okay.
Now you have size. You have a very small writing size, which is yours. Yours is smaller than small.
Right.
And that shows that the person has wonderful mental concentration capabilities.
Okay.
Now, imagine how true that is, because if you really focus on something, what do? You lean down on the paper, and you carefully, squeeze out every little letter.
Right.
If you're shooting blind, you'll have 6-foot letters on the sheet of paper.
Right.
So size does matter, so
sure.
to speak.
Sure. What about where you cross your letter? What about where you cross your letters? You mentioned the T earlier on.
Okay, let's take a look at the T. And again, we're looking at lowercase. So imagine that you're making a T bar, which is vertical. It's going up and down.
Right.
Before you cross it with the T cross. And if there's a TP at the end, at the base of this bar, at the two bars that you made, like the lines are crossed and they spread at the bottom.
Right.
So that's called a TP, that space. And the wider that space is, the greater the probability is of having a very strong, stubborn streak.
Okay.
Now, if you take the T bar and move it to the top or close to the top and cross that stem equally, left and right, in balance, that means that you reach high for things, but you're not doing it in a callous way.
Right.
Okay, you're planning, you're organizing.
It's more intentional.
Yes. Now, if you, just to cut it short a bit, if you move that crossbar down to the middle, it means that you're not really doing the best that you can because you're not aiming high enough.
Okay.
And if you have lower than the middle, then you think very little of yourself.
Okay. What about the eye? I once heard that if somebody drew the circle, the dot on top of an eye as a kind of an open circle, that it had something to do with large ego. Is that something true?
Well, yes and no, but that's a good point. So, yeah, a lot of people will make a circle rather than a dot.
Right.
And when they make a circle, what they're saying is, look at me, I want to be different.
Okay, I want to be noticed.
Yeah, now, does a person who's different want to be different?
Right.
Not likely. They already are.
Right, okay. Exactly. And what about when they just do, and so is there any analysis for the traditional dot? Or
yes, there is, of course, yes. So if a dot is very round and it's consistently that way, it shows the individual is very loyal.
So that's just the regular, like, pinpoint dot?
Yeah, just the ordinary dot.
Okay.
Now, if the ordinary dot is a little larger in size and is very dark, that means that person is suffering from something.
Okay. What about where the dot is located, like whether it's on right on top of the eye or if it's over to the left or right?
If the eye is to the left and the dot is way off to the right,
right,
that's an impulsive reaction. So that person might react impulsively on occasion.
Okay. What about if it's to the other side?
Procrastination.
Right, okay. Okay, interesting. And do you find that when you're doing analysis that it varies depending on the gender or the age of the person?
No, Sarah. I don't think I've ever been aware that any of the writing told me an age.
Right.
Or a gender, for that matter, or whether they're left or right-handed.
That's true, too. I didn't even think about that. So you haven't noticed any difference.
Well, I guess I'm not all that right.
Well, no, I mean, there may not be any difference.
From my experience, I was never aware of any difference.
So why is it that you ask for 3 sentences? Is that just so that you have more words to look at or more letters to look at?
Yes, of course. The more I have to look at, the better job I can do in analyzing, because I have more things to look at.
Do you prefer to be done on unlined paper or lined paper? Does it matter?
Oh, it matters. Unlined paper.
So the reason that you would want it done on unlined paper is because on lined paper, there'd be a tendency to follow the lines, whereas on unlined, you'd be able to see whether the writing goes upwards or downwards or which direction it's going in.
Yes, now here's how this works. So if it's upward, I said, boy, are you ever enthusiastic?
Right.
And you're positive looking, you know? Very good.
Right.
And that's what yours is consistently. They're all going up.
Right.
Now, if they began going up and then start to come down, what do you suppose that might mean?
You may lose your enthusiasm.
Well, exactly. You see how reasonable it is? No, it really is.
So you get enthusiastic about something, but...
That the person is trying to be in an up state.
Right.
And they put energy into it.
Right.
And they're working hard at it. And halfway through the day, they can't go on.
They lose steam.
They lose steam and they're running out of all sorts of energy.
Right.
And it comes back down to where they began.
Right.
And conversely, when you have like a happy smile upward trend, the same thing is happening.
So did you say that you can sometimes tell where a person is at presently versus who they are maybe in the long term?
No. To me, that's kind of, prophesizing.
Well, I guess you mentioned maybe when the dot is darker, you can tell that they're kind of in a bad space.
Well, yes, you can tell if they're in a bad state.
So that would be maybe more about where they're at the moment, correct?
That's right.
Right. So certain indicators would tell you maybe not, you know, who they are as people, but just where they are presently, perhaps, too.
Mm-hmm. You get the general traits, and then you have emotional, you know, sparks happening.
Right.
And then you get little quirky things. And then when you add them all together, there's much involved in analyzing and making a story out of it.
For sure.
So, but you can, you know. I know people who are wonderful at that, and it's exhilarating for me. It just absolutely is.
So it must be interesting when you're writing, you must be so consciously aware of how you're writing and what it says about you.
No,
you don't get caught up in that.
I don't get caught up in that. I don't think you would get caught up in that either. You know, you're a psychologist.
Right.
So you analyze everything?
Well, yeah. No, I mean, I just think if I knew what my handwriting revealed, because you said earlier, too, that you can actually sometimes even create a shift in your personality, perhaps by being more conscious of what your handwriting is revealing.
I've done that. I have done that personally.
Right. That's what I mean by that.
Yes. I'm a stubborn individual, very stubborn, and so stubborn that it's a horrific negative for me and to people around me.
So you've tried to change that by changing certain things about how you place your
how I make the tea without the teepee.
Right. Exactly.
And I did that. I worked on that for maybe a month.
Right.
And while I'm still stubborn, nothing has changed there, I no longer am compelled to be stubborn, and I guard against being stubborn.
Right.
So for all intents and purposes, I'm no longer stubborn.
Right. You work on that.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Now, you mentioned your experience with the psychiatrist, which was an interesting one. Are there any others that kind of stand out in your mind in terms of interesting experiences you've had while analyzing people's handwriting?
Oh, there have been so many, but, you know, some things do stick a little more than others, and that's because they hit at the heart. And I was analyzing a young lady. She was in her early 40s, I gathered. And I took a look at what she had written, and the first thing I said to her was, do you know that you're very intelligent, you're very bright? And within a second, she had burst into tears.
Hmm.
And I was thinking, what have I done? And things calmed down, and I asked her, well, what was all that about? And she said to me that all her life, people whom she knew well were telling her how stupid she is.
Wow.
And it went on so consistently that she bought into that.
Huh.
And when she heard me say how bright she is, it was like a huge door and light opening up.
Wow, the first person who maybe saw something
that no one else had.
And
it just hit her, and she couldn't control herself.
Hmm. So that could be life-changing for her.
I think it was, yes.
That's amazing.
And that's why I remember it so well.
I'm sure. I'm sure that's a nice story. So what do you find most rewarding about what you do? Those kinds of experiences, I would imagine, would be very rewarding.
Absolutely. And I find that at least with every session that I go through, I have at least between 5 and 10 or 15 warm-hearted experiences.
Mm, that's wonderful.
And it's beyond wonderful. I wish other people could be as lucky as I am. That's all I can say.
To be able to do what you love to do.
No, to feel as good about it.
Yeah. Well, of course. I mean, that's rewarding for you, rewarding for the people that you're working with. So, Simon, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us and for opening our eyes to what our handwriting reveals about us. And to see a full listing of all Help Me Sara podcasts and to learn more about Simon Zelkovich, please visit the podcast section at www.helpmesara.com. You can also subscribe to Help Me Sara podcast on iTunes, subscribe to my Facebook page, which is Sara Dimmerman, Help Me Sara, or follow me on Twitter at Help Me Sara. Until next time.